Welcome to Shooting the Frisbees with your hosts, Jake and Randy, discussing all things freestyle frisbee and whatever else that comes up. All right.
Welcome to Shooting the Frisbees with Jake and Randy. Hey, Randy, how's it going?
Hey, Jake, I'm doing great today. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, except I'm here at work making this recording, but hey, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah, indeed. I know that's crazy, but I'm glad that you're able to carve out this time because we're going to do a bonus episode this week. And the reason why is because Jam Britannia is going to be next weekend. And we thought it would be cool to continue our conversation with Con Cummins, who is talking about his early days with Adrian Wainwright and Jason Salke and their partnership. And what's cool is that these guys have not seen each other for like 30 years, and they're actually going to play together in this upcoming Jam Britannia. So I think that's pretty cool that we can kind of dovetail this in. I think the other thing that's really cool is that we're going to live stream the event as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, thanks to Chris. He's going to show up with his camera and all of his equipment and he's live stream Jam Britannia for us. So check it out on Frisbee Guru, and you get to see these guys reunion, and you get to see them play again after 30 years. How cool is that?
Yeah, that is awesome. So we're going to begin this conversation with Con, and he's going to talk about his early inspirations. So enjoy. Could you talk about some of the early inspirations for you of those European players?
After Adrian stopped playing for a little while when I was about 19, 20, I think it was. And I had a girlfriend named Mary, and we got a call from Claudio, from Clay, in my flat in London. And Clay couldn't speak any English. Fabrizio was his frisbee partner, couldn't speak much English, but just enough to say, hi, it's Con there.
So you're saying Clay Calera?
Yeah. And luckily, my girlfriend, she could speak four languages, and Italian was one of them. So she took the call, and they said, would you like to come down to Italy to get a routine together and then go to Denmark and enter the European Championships up there? So that was on. We went down to Rimini, and we got this routine together. After that 2 weeks, we hitched all the way up to Denmark and played in there. But my point was that Clay was a really good guy to meet because he was just so delightful and so full of fun. He was a really good guy to jam with, not just to get a routine together with, but, you know, a really good guy to jam with because he was just like a little kid, you know. He just loved playing frisbee. That was a nice kick just to keep the spirit alive. Do you know what I mean? Because it was very different. Like the relationship I had with Adrian, not so much Jason because he wasn't around as much. We didn't play together as much. But Adrian was very different. It was a very intense, like hard, sometimes really laborious sort of thing. If you spend 6 to 8 hours a day with somebody playing frisbee, it can be pretty pretty heavy going sometimes. So, you know, when the times were great, they were great. But, you know, we did have times when we were just completely over each other. And he was screaming at me, if you don't throw the disc straight, I'm never playing with you again. And I'm shouting back, nobody would play with you, you asshole.
So, great friendship.
well, yeah, but it is. I mean, it's a very deep friendship. There's nobody like your frisbee partner. There's something really, there's nothing like frisbee, really, like freestyle frisbee. But, to go through that time with somebody, that you forge a really deep, soulful sort of friendship that I don't think you can get anywhere else.
You and Adrian really had that. I mean, you guys were partners for a long time. You guys did the deep dive together for sure, yeah?
Yeah, we did. We spent a lot of time together. I mean, even after playing, we'd just sit in the car and make up stupid songs and talk about who was better, Joey or Donnie.
That's what we talk about all the time.
Wait, that's still happening.
Right. Not much has changed then. But yeah, it was a very, long-term sort of friendship. Yeah, right, I mean, he had to. You probably won't mind me telling you, this is so long ago now, but he had to qualify. Those days, you had to qualify to go to Irvine. I think it was 79 or maybe 80. I can't quite remember, but you had to qualify to be part of the overall English team. And so he had to enter distance, but he couldn't really throw distance very well. But he also had to enter golf, frisbee golf. And I was spotting the disc in inverted commas. And what I was doing was each time the disc would come over a hill or around the corner, I'd throw it closer to the golf fence, so it would look like it looked like he'd done a really good shot. And even though people were sort of suspicious, at least he qualified and managed to go.
Oh my god!
Like running the Boston Marathon and getting a ride like 2 miles in.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, he is, and he is one of the funniest people I've ever met, man. I don't know if you've ever met him, but he is hysterical, very quick-witted, great, great sense of humor. Yeah. I hadn't seen him. I saw him about 8-9 years ago, something like that. I hadn't seen him for ages. I went, man, you're so thin. What do you eat? And he just turned around to me and said, oh, you know, butterfly wings and morning dew. Like straight off the bat, very,
oh, that's awesome.
Very quick. Jason also was a big influence on us. I tell you who else I met was Kerry Colmar, and I only saw him once. I think that was 79, but he was really delightful to watch play because, you know, it was play with a capital P. I mean, he had this really big, open, I think he was into martial arts as well, but he'd like kick the disc really high. And, you know, the chest rolls would be really high and everything was like, you know, super flashy and open. And, you know, he just looked like he was having a really good time. It wasn't the sort of intense technical type of play that you get from, like New Yorkers. But it was like a very, big delight to watch. Oh, and Stork as well. He came over to England and there was something called the Milton Keynes Air Day, which was, it was everything that could fly. It was like kites, you know, balloons, like hot air balloons that you could take rides in, tubies, anything. And frisbees were part of that. And Stork, that was the first time I met Stork, because he'd come and he'd done, I think he was on a tour as well, and had a great jam with him. And it was a real kind of student-disciple type moment when there was a lovely strong wind, really clear wind in this big Milton Keynes bowl, and he was standing upwind, and I think I was like 15 or 16 or something like that, and I just learned how to psycho bash, and like that was it for me. I just loved psycho bashing, and I would psycho bash this disc to Stork, and he'd do these really fine, delicate touches on the bottom, the top of the disc, change the angle, and then just pop it, like tip it up into the air really slowly, and it would sort of come back to me, and I'd go bang, 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 psycho bash, then back up to him, and then he'd do these really slow motion movements. And we kept that going for like 20 minutes, man, and it was, eventually they had to drag him away to go and do a demo or something, but it was a delightful moment, I gotta say.
Wow. That's very cool. So was counter your main spin? You mentioned psycho bash. So I'm wondering.
No. Clock is my main spin.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I could do stuff with counter. I could do center delay stuff and pull outs and stuff with counter. But clock was really where was my major spin. The thing about our play was, like you were talking about the influences, Adrian had a big influence and Jason had a big influence on my play because they'd been to New York and they'd seen, you know, that all of that flat work and against the spin moves and all the, you know, that inner city, gusty wind, up and down sort of type play. Do you know what I mean? So it wasn't the kind of wind play that you get in California.
Right, right.
So when they came back and said, well, this is where it's at, it's like, that's what we practice. It wasn't until when I, you know, went out to California and saw Joey and other guys play that I, you know, I got a real different sense of, I mean, we were brushing and we would do all kinds of stuff like that, but it was at another level when I saw it out in California. So when Jason came back and Adrian came back from New York, that's what we were into. It was all kind of flat work and, you know, double spinning pullouts, triple spinning pullouts, holds. And I mean, Adrian took the center delay to the nth degree. Like he would, he was a very controlled player. So he'd set the disc up, he'd do two spins, and then it would land on his finger and stay there. He wasn't ripping it out or whatever. You know that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where the lid of the ark comes down from on high and just slams close right at the end? Well, that's kind of what Adrian's play was like. He just, the disc would hit his finger and he'd just hold it there. I didn't see many people that would really do that. I tell you who did that was Hal Erickson, who's a guy in California. He had a really long sort of body, and he just put his hand behind his back and he'd have plenty of space just to hold it there. And then he could set it up and do another couple of spins and hold it on the other side sort of thing.
Hal was amazing with that. When you're talking about Adrian holding that, you're not going to just double spin and getting it in the he would do that behind the back hold. Are you referring to that kind of restricted hold in those
double
spins?
Yeah, that's right. Behind the back hold. Yeah. Behind the back hold. And then if he passed it from one hand to the other, it would be all on the center and all really slowly. It wasn't kind of rushed. It was all smooth and then held in the center with his head upside down looking at the disc. And then he'd pass it to the other hand and then bring it through like clock on his left hand, bring it through against the spin. So it'd all be like really slow and controlled. So it was a very different kind of way of playing, but it was very worthy of respect, I've got to say. Who else was around? Oh, Jan Ekman was around in those days. Jan and Rolo and Petri Osala. Jan Ekman, we had a bit of a fraught relationship to begin with because, you know, he was a very good player and was like a bit of a threat to us and, you know, in championship sort of thing. So there was a little bit of antagonism there until we sort of grew up a bit. And then I think he invited me over to Sweden to play and we did demos and stuff like that, which was kind of cool. But he was a really good player as well. He could do some really nice moves. And I think he took his style a bit after Donny Rhodes was into that whole very pretty balletic sort of looking style of play.
I kind of want to learn more, Con, about how much Frisbee really integrated into your life. Like, were you doing demos and shows? Was it how you made your living?
Oh, it took over completely, man. I mean, look, I did a lot of skateboarding and roller skating and, you know, as I said, like juggling and all this sort of thing. But Frisbee was really what, it was everything really to me. I mean, I didn't actually go to school for a good couple of years, really. I'd sort of turn up in the mornings just to show my face and then I'd go down to the park and I would practice. I actually got taken to court, like juvenile court, and it held in front of a magistrate and he said to me, well, what have you been doing for, you know, this whole year and a half that you haven't been at school? And I said, I've represented my country in freestyle frisbee. And I've won a European championships. And he went, oh, well, well done. That's very good. But you have to go to school.
But so you still have to go to school.
So I had to go back to school until I was like, I think it was 15 when I left. That's how big a deal it was to me. Everything had to fit around my frisbee.
How did the frisbee work into your, so you're like, you're in school and you're living with your parents. I can see you can spend all of your free time playing frisbee, but eventually you move out on your own. So how do you make that work?
It was a combination of, like, you could get what they call the dole, which was like a welfare payment that you could collect when you got out of school. And then, you know, I'd get like little jobs here for cash in hand sort of thing. I had a sort of entrepreneurial combustible business, if you know what I mean, kind of going on at the same time. And I would also do shows. I'd do Frisbee shows. And because I had such a background in, you know, magic and dancing and all these things, I could do these shows. I'd go out to, like, nightclubs or trade fairs or whatever. I had a couple of agents that would get me these gigs. And I'd go out and I'd do shows every once in a while. And that would give me, you know, a couple of $100 here, a couple of $100 there. And that was a way of sort of, you know, juggling my finances to keep it all on the go. But it wasn't very expensive to you know, hang out in the park all day. All you need to do is eat and drink. And so that's kind of how we did it. I mean, I didn't pay rent because I was living with a mate of mine for years. I kind of left home very early. His dad had left him an apartment. So we stayed in the apartment and lived there for good 3 or 4 years or something like that. Yeah, so that's kind of how I made it work. I could have gone further into the show type thing, but I didn't really have a partner, and it was kind of lonely. You'd go to these hotels after the show or whatever, you couldn't get back, and it's not a great existence if you don't have, like, Frisbee partners.
So Adrian wasn't doing the shows with you, it was just you on your own.
No. We did one or two demos. We did a demo with Jason Salke, but we that ended up in a hysterical fits of laughter because Jason had decided to draw a smiley face on his left testicle. In the middle of this demo, he'd rolled over to do like a John Dwork type, you know, bediddling move. And his left testicle fell out of his shorts. And Adrian said, "I can see your balls." And Jason couldn't get up off the floor. He was laughing so hard, just trying to pediddle this disc. And it didn't look very good. So we sort of didn't really do many demos after that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I can see why.
I mean, yeah, we were just terrible people, man. It was, we didn't take any of that sort of stuff too seriously. I mean, when I did shows on my own, I had a sort of routine. I did like a little mime thing with a balloon, and then I'd do some juggling and a bit of magic or whatever, and then I'd bring out the Frisbee. One of the best ones that I ever did was in Queen's Park Rangers football grounds, about 40,000 people there, and there was a band, I can't remember who was playing, but there was a band there. And I'd gotten to the Frisbee part of this show, and I set this disc up, and it towered from the wind and just took off stage right. And I was standing there looking at the crowd, and they were all laughing at me, man. It was horrible. It was terrible. I don't know if you've had 40,000 people laugh at you, but it did not feel good at all. And so I went off, and I got this Frisbee, and I thought, right, I'll show you, you bastards. I'd set the disc up and I started doing these tricks, and I did a triple spinning flamingo catch and then just span around and, you know, put the disc up like that. And they just cheered their ass off. It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome.
Let's see if I got the timeline right. So you were in school, but then eventually you stopped going to school and you moved in with your friend. And then at some point you transitioned to the Frisbee house.
16, 17, we spent a lot of time, Les Bryant and Nick Sharland. And then we basically just honed our skills doing all the stuff that, you know, we wanted to do. The guys were musicians as well. So, and that was about 82. And then I'm a little shaky on whether it was 83 or 84, but I went to, I'd heard about Joey and Palm Park from Adrian, because Adrian had been out to Irvine, California for a championship there. And he said, oh, you know, there's this guy named Joey and he's in Santa Barbara or whatever. So I thought, right, well, I'll go out there and I'll see what I can see what I can see, learn some moves. So I think it was 83 or 84. And immediately, I can't remember who I met first, but somebody took me around to Richie Smith's place. And, it was great, man. It was like, you know, there I was, this young guy, and they were living in these apartments. And next door to him was, I think, was the world champion hang glider. And then two doors down, there was the world champion skateboarder. And then these world champion frisbee players. And Joey kind of walked out. I think he was living in his van at the time. I think it was Connie Bond and Kate Dow had taken me round. And we just had a great time chatting or whatever. When I think it was the next day or the day after, I went down to Palm Park and just knocked on Joey's door on his van and said, do you want to play? I stayed there for about 3 months. I was living with Chipper and Connie Bond and Kate Dow, but I was in the garage. The garage was sort of set up with a bed, and so I had a place to stay, and just spent, you know, hours played with Pete Rosing, Richie Smits, Dave Zeff, and that was a real eye-opener to me, just with the wind play, because there was so much that was available for you to do in those kind of conditions that, you know, you wouldn't have guessed in 1,000 years that you could do. I remember seeing Joey do, I think it was like 4 or 5 rolls strung together. He'd like do this skid roll. So it was clock, and he skidded it over his left shoulder off to his right hand, and then it rolled back again. And then a triple fake brush to a half a chest roll, brush around the back, and then some double spinning catch or something like that. And I thought, wow, this is like a whole different level of, you know, body rolling.
You were doing that flat delay stuff, and all of a sudden you went, whoa, what's that?
Well, no, I mean, we'd done chest rolls and back rolls and all that kind of stuff. I'd been exposed to a lot of that stuff by Jason and Adrian, but not to that degree. I mean, right. the consecutivity that is that the word?
Consecutivity? Yep. Got it.
That Joey had. It was not like the moves were intensely difficult, but when you strung those moves together, that's where the difficulty came in. It was like one move after another, really flowing movement. I mean, he could do, you know, he could do against the spin pulls, behind the back holds and all that sort of thing. But it was that married with the wind play, which was really cool. Like he could do guides, double spin, and then he'd pull it out inverted under his leg or something like that, which was like, it was kind of new to me to see people playing with the wind that well, because we didn't have that kind of wind in London.
Wow, Randy, could you imagine just showing up somewhere, knocking on a van door and saying, hey, man, let's jam. You've never met this guy before. And suddenly, like, let's do it. Why not? How cool is that?
I know, that's crazy. And like, especially somebody like Joey, you know, who's, you know, one of the top players at the time and maybe of all time. Khan had some game too. So Joey must have been kind of like going, whoa, who's this dude? Pretty cool that that happened.
Yeah, totally. I can only imagine how that went. Joey probably was like, who is this crazy dude just knocking on my door and wanting to play with me? Doesn't he know who I am? And then when they get on the field, he's like, oh, okay, I get it now. This makes sense. So, hey, just want to throw out the reminder there. We will be live streaming Jam Britannia next weekend. So make sure you tune in because you don't want to miss it. Con Cummins will be out there jamming again for the first time in 30 years, I'd say. And he'll be playing with his buddies, Adrian and Jason. So don't forget to tune in. We want to see you online.
Yes. And on that note, Jake, I will talk to you next time.
Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to Shooting the Frisbees with Jake and Randy. To contact us or for more info, check us out at frisbeeguru.com. Home to Hainesville, shooting the Frisbees. and live stream.